Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. As usual, we are also live on Facebook, so do share and give us your feedback.
That's right, indeed, Zippy. Coming up on the program, Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa is in South Africa on his first foreign trip as head of state to woo investors to his country. We hear from an analyst.
Zimbabwe is going through their redeveloping their policies. The signs at the moment are promising to investors. And what we are seeing is that there has been quite a lot of investor interest because there seems to be a new mood, at least for now.
Authorities in Cameroon deny media reports that its army crossed into Nigeria in pursuit of separatists in English-speaking regions who have launched an armed insurgency.
The terrorists had taken advantage of the dense forest at the border with Nigeria to set up secret training camps from which they organized raids against our defense forces.
Well, these are just some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But first, here's a chance to hear what's been happening around the globe.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. Spain's Catalonia region heads to the polls in snap elections on Thursday. The regional election pits separatists and loyalists against one another following months of tense relations with Madrid. Mata Rovira, Secretary General of the Republican Left of Catalonia, was hoping for pro-independence votes.
We expect to see a strong democratic turnout as it happened on October 1st. We expect today Catalan citizens will exercise their democratic rights, and we expect that with great hope.
Catalonia voted for its independence in October, but it was deemed illegal by the Spanish government and not officially recognized. Zimbabwe's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, met with his South African counterpart in his first foreign trip since replacing Robert Mugabe last month. South African President Jacob Zuma said the two discussed Mugabe and agreed he would be looked after. Zuma also praised how the Zimbabwean military handled the situation, saying similar situations would leave a trail of destruction in other countries. The United Nations is scheduled to vote on whether to oppose the United States' decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. The U.S. threatened to cut funding to nations that did not support its decision. U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, said the U.S. would be taking names of nations that vote to oppose the U.S.'s decision. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has already come out in opposition, saying that the U.S. could not buy people's free will. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. The man accused of bombing the Borussia Dortmund team bus in April appeared in court on Thursday. The German-Russian man faces 28 counts of attempted murder. One Dortmund player was injured in the blasts before a Champions League match against Monaco. At least 19 people were injured after a car rammed into a busy intersection in Melbourne, Australia. The police say it was a deliberate act, but did not call it terrorism at this point.
At this stage, we believe it is a deliberate act. However, we do not know the motivation, and it is still early stages of the investigation.
Police say the suspect had a history of mental health problems and drug abuse. South Africa's Kumi Naidu has been appointed as Amnesty International's next Secretary General. Naidu was previously the Executive Director of Greenpeace International and currently works with three South African startups in his home country. He will take over the world's largest human rights organization starting August 2018. And in sports, there will be no repeat German Cup champion this year. Bayern Munich knocked defending champion Borussia Dortmund out of the third round with a 2-1 victory. Bayer Leverkusen, Werder Bremen, and Eintracht Frankfurt also punched their tickets to the quarterfinals with one-goal victories. The quarterfinal matchups will be drawn in January. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
Welcome back once again to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And at this time, we'd like to welcome our listeners who are following us live on Facebook, DW Africa. Ahmed Musa says, very informative. Keep it on. More grease to your elbow. And Salisu Umal says, a victory to journalism. comment on the stories that we are going to bring to you right now, and we read the comments live on air. We begin in Zimbabwe, where President Emmerson Mnangagwa traveled to South Africa, a country he sought refuge after being fired as deputy president early this month. Mnangagwa hopes to persuade investors that economically struggling Zimbabwe is an attractive business prospect after the November 21st resignation of former leader Robert Mugabe, whose 37-year rule ended after a military takeover. In South Africa, he addressed a business forum and the Zimbabwean diaspora. Zimbabwe desperately needs investment after suffering an economic decline under former President Mugabe. Before we came on air, I spoke to Knox Chitio, Associate Fellow of the Africa Program at Chatham House, and I began by asking him about the timing of Mnangagwa's visit to South Africa.
The timing is very important, and also that it's with South Africa. It's his first major official meeting with another head of state. So it's very important, and it acknowledges the importance of the Zimbabwe-South Africa relationship. And also clearly, South Africa hosts Zimbabwe's largest diaspora. So it just shows the importance of South Africa to Zimbabwe and vice versa.
Now, Mnangagwa's new administration strives to revitalize the economy through attracting investment. And this is high up on the agenda during his visit. Does the country have the necessary policies to attract investors at the moment?
Zimbabwe is going through developing their policies. There have been some economic reforms which are in the process of being rolled out, particularly with regards to indigenization. They're really pushing the anti-corruption agenda. So it's still a work in progress, but the signs at the moment are promising to investors. And what we are seeing is that there has been quite a lot of investor interest, because there seems to be a new mood, at least for now, in Zimbabwe and also from outside. I think the feeling is that investors are, they're not fully convinced, but they're willing to give it a chance.
In what areas do you think South Africa can really help Zimbabwe to grow its economy and create jobs for its people so that they don't keep on, you know, flowing into South Africa in search of the few jobs that are there for the blacks?
Obviously, the South Africans are very keen that the economic reform agenda is really pushed and maintained. There are more than, I think, 120 plus South African companies investing in Zimbabwe. So South Africa has a large economic footprint in Zimbabwe. So they're already assisting Zimbabwe. So I think for the South Africans, what they really want to see is to make sure that the economic reform agenda is really pushed. That they're particularly, I think, interested that the Indigenization Act, which caused a lot of consternation among potential investors, those reforms are maintained. That Indigenization Act is being reformed as we speak.
Now, over the years, many skilled Zimbabweans have left the country for a variety of reasons, and it seems like Mnangagwa wants them back to be part of a broad economic calculus designed for the recovery and take off the economy. Do you think they will heed his call to return back home and be part of nation building?
Well, there's certainly some growing interest. I mean, just a few days ago, overarching diaspora platform here in the UK said they will be going in January to meet with the president. This is a group of 15 to 20 UK-based Zimbabwean business people. So there is some interest already.
I was speaking to Knox Chitio, Associate Fellow of the Africa Program at Chatham House in London. Zippy, we have some comments on that story.
Yes, of course, many people have been talking about Mnangagwa's visit to South Africa. And Z Media Review tweeted that there were long queues of people hoping to get into Mnangagwa's meeting in Pretoria. A bigger venue was necessary, and those who pre-registered were, however, able to get in.
And Shadrach Okello just sent a message on our Facebook page. He says, will he be the one running elections? But still in Africa, the incumbent presidents are the ones running elections in the name of independent bodies, because Mnangagwa promised to organize free and fair elections come the year 2018.
We hope so, for sure. Mm. Yeah.
And Spencer Mavura says, I'm so impressed about how people want to see a new Zimbabwe. It seems everyone is willing to work for a better Zimbabwe. At Africa Link, we also hope so, and we always monitor this story whenever it evolves from our correspondents on the ground in Harare.
So keep writing. And now we move on to another story that's making headlines, and that is in Catalonia, where voters are casting their ballots in a hotly contested election seen as a barometer of support for independence from Spain. The poll comes 2 months after the region declared independence following a referendum opposed by Madrid. Spanish authorities responded to that with a crackdown, arresting separatist leaders and calling Thursday's snap election. Madrid hopes it will put an end to the political crisis. For more on the Catalonian elections, our colleague Sumi Somoskanda spoke to DW's correspondent in Barcelona, Lisa Louis.
Well, the latest polls are saying that it's a neck and neck race. Basically, if there is a camp that would get a very, very slim majority, it would be those who are supporting independence. However, they are split. They actually seem not to be able to agree on who should be the leader. So many people here are actually expecting that if there is a government that comes out of these elections, it won't be very stable. And voters and experts have told us that they're expecting this not to be the last round of voting, but that there could be a second or even a third round of voting very soon.
Well, Lisa, the former Catalan leader, Carles Puigdemont, he's spoken from his self-imposed exile in Brussels. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Clearly, what's happening today isn't normal. This isn't a normal day in a democracy. There are candidates in prison, candidates in exile. There is fear. Spanish institutions are intervening. The governing People's Party have taken over our institutions. It's economic war. All of this shows that we are not in a normal situation. What we have to hope for at the end of today is that we'll re-establish normality.
And the EU, I imagine, Lisa, is watching this vote very closely?
Absolutely. The EU obviously wants this problem to go away. They want Spain to be united so that the EU can just go about its business and doesn't have to deal with these secession problems anymore.
Lisa Louis in Barcelona.
Cameroon has denied allegations that its soldiers crossed into Nigeria without permission and attacked villages said to be hosting and training armed separatist groups. The media had reported that at least one incursion had been confirmed by a Nigerian government and military official, but Cameroon says it only attacked its border villages where the armed separatists were hiding and committing atrocities. Mokinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Cameroon Communication Minister and government spokesperson Issa Chiruma says since President Paul Biya declared war on armed separatists about a month ago, the military has launched raids on areas on Cameroon's border with Nigeria where their training camps are, but have never crossed over to the neighboring state.
The terrorists had taken advantage of the dense forest at the border with Nigeria to set up secret training camps from which they organized raids against our defense forces. Following the dismantlement operation thus carried out, the hideout of these murderers were literally destroyed and the villages previously taken hostage were liberated. Many terrorists have been permanently neutralized. Several suspects have been arrested, large quantity of war and hunting weapons, as well as hundreds of military ammunition and uniform have also been seized.
Victor Arendip, resident of the Cameroon border village of Kembong, in a telephone interview, said that his village and two others were completely destroyed in fighting between the military and armed separatists.
They have bombed three villages. So everybody should be very careful with what is happening on the ground now. As I'm telling you, people are dying in their numbers in Manfe.
Ojong Anslem, another resident of Eyumojok, also told DW that the separatists still gain a lot of support from the border, even though Cameroon troops are killing many people.
What is now on the streets in the northwest and southwest is sensation.
The UNHCR says the violence has pushed thousands of Cameroonians across the border to Nigeria since the separatists declared their independence.
Mokinzeka reporting, and Seba Bisong says no media or international community should ever believe the Cameroonian government.
Akode Edge says even if they did, Nigeria will not do anything because our security system is weak and corrupt.
Gola Kongai says a government with no regards for human rights and respect of international laws will certainly see international boundaries and or international law as thrash. Anyway, keep those comments flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we'll always read them. And in case you've just tuned in, this is DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, a military appeals court in Cameroon has acquitted and freed a correspondent for Radio France International, Hausa Service, who had been sentenced to 10 years in prison.
It's very good because he will be able to go to leave the prison where he has been held for the past over 2 years. And if you look at the facts, there are absolutely no reasons that he should have been held, even for one day.
Tell us what you think about the freed journalist and the impact, the role of the government to ensure that there's free media in Cameroon and elsewhere. And we'll be happy to read your comment live on air.
But first, Isaac, of course, we go to Ghana, to northern Ghana, where mobile telephone users are not happy with the fees levied by their network providers when sending money using mobile banking apps. The system of mobile money banking is becoming the fastest and easiest way of sending and receiving money in Africa for business and private transactions. In this festive season, mobile users say they are being ripped off by mobile companies that are charging high fees of about 1% for every transaction made. Fraudsters have also taken advantage of the Christmas season to hack into mobile money systems and steal huge amounts of money. From Tamale, Maxwell Suk sent this report.
Christmas carols fill the central business area in Tamale as the festive season intensifies. For most people, especially Christians, it is a time for shopping, eating, drinking and making merry. That means money is involved. And what better way than to send and receive cash to your loved ones via mobile phones? I watch from a distance until Memuna Yahya finishes transacting money via her mobile phone. From the look on her face, she is not very happy.
If you are sending, you pay. If you are going to withdraw, you pay. If you don't have money in your accounts, then you pay. They will deduct from the amount that you are sending. But if you have money in your account, they will just withdraw. They will deduct from the money that you sent. This is what they do.
Mobile money transactions have taken the country by storm. MTN Ghana, one of the telecommunications service providers alone, has over 85,000 mobile money agents nationwide. This number far outstrips the number of conventional banks in Ghana at the moment. But critics say this innovation appears to be robbing the poor than normal banking transactions. Abdul Majid Rufai, business development manager at MTN in Ghana, defended the service as he explained to me via telephone.
Any amount below 50 Ghana cedi is 50 pesos. That's the charge. If you are sending any amount above 50 Ghana cedi, is charged 1%. And then that 1% is capped at 1,000. So if you want to send, for instance, 1,000 Ghana cedi, the fee charge is 10 cedi. 2,000 is still 10 cedi. 3,000 is still 10 cedi. If you send 4,000, it's still 10 cedi. If you send 5,000, it's still 10 cedi. So there's way you will be charged over 10 cedi on the platform.
High transaction fees isn't the only problem. Lately, the mobile money service has been rocked by fraudsters, with many Ghanaians becoming victims. Jonathan Kojo is a cybersecurity expert in Northern Ghana, says part of the solution lies in strengthening SIM card registrations.
They should check the registration system and get rid of, you know, SIM cards that are not properly registered. If it means calling them back and doing the registration all over again, I think that would be appropriate.
Despite the exorbitant charges and the risks of fraud, mobile money transaction remains the choice for many Ghanaians like Joseph Awudaga.
Now, I prefer using mobile money than going to the bank because normally you queue a lot and sometimes they'll tell you that the system is down, there's no network. So I prefer using mobile money than in the banking system.
And as the cash continues to flow from one mobile device to another, one thing is certain, this Christmas will be merry.
Maxwell Suk reporting from Ghana.
And we asked a question, what is the cost of mobile money transfers in your country? And do you think it is a fraud? And Zippy, We have many comments from different parts of Africa,
right.
From Ghana, Uganda, Liberia, Tanzania,
and
even
Kenya.
Sudan. Oh, Kenya, M-Pesa. Anyway,
yeah,
let's kick it off. You know, what is that comment from Kenya?
I have to start with that one because David Dida says the Ghanaians are getting robbed. He says with M-Pesa in Kenya, sending withdrawing costs less than 0.01% of the transaction.
And Mbazira Dane says it's the same here in Uganda. It got interesting when MTN hiked its airtime cards. For airtime of Ugandan shillings, that's 2,000, that's, you know, almost, you know, a dollar or 1 euro and a few cents. Mm-hmm. They charge extra cents, 50 cents. You wonder how it all happened. The problem in Africa is that majority of businesses don't care about service delivery, but rather soliciting for money from customers. It's absurd. Oh, well said, Mbazira, we heard you.
From Tanzania, Remy Nathan says charges varies according to the amount you send or receive. It's not fraud to be charged as long as it is a business.
Yeah, Cyprian says in Cameroon it's the same. Charges on both sides is stealing. You can't charge me for transferring money to my sister, and then when my sister goes to withdraw, she still pays some charges. Why? So banks are better than this mobile money thing. But I think, I mean, there's a lot of sensitization on part of, you know, these mobile companies to do more explaining of how this business of money transfer is, you know, because most of the people in rural parts of the country benefit much from this, and they have not been taught or sensitized enough about how this whole business is done.
But Isaac, what I know with M-Pesa is that when you pay, the other person does not have to pay to receive the money.
And this was the whole story. When you receive, also you pay. And it makes the whole question that we put out there on Facebook, you know, much relevant. The cost of mobile transfer and whether you think it's a fraud. And most of these comments are saying, you know, they can't make us pay double. Anyway, we'll be back right after this.
Views on.
Now, if you have been wondering why Kenyans always win gold medals at international competitions, wonder no more. The hills of the North Rift Valley in Western Kenya are a big reservoir of athletic talent. Here, young people don't want to become teachers, lawyers, or doctors. They want to be professional runners. Eva De Vries spent a few days at the training camp where many Kenyan world champions learned the skill. That's St. Patrick's Athletics Youth Program in Iten. In this report, she meets the world beaters of the future and finds out the secret of this magic place.
We are in Iten, 2,400 meters above sea level, also called the home of champions, after the many runners that come from this hilly, high-altitude place in Kenya's Great Rift Valley. This beautiful area breeds running. Early in the morning, there are athletes everywhere, warming up their muscles for another day of training. Agents are on the lookout for talent. International running camps attract professional and amateur runners from all over the world. And in the small town, shops and cafes are named Atleti Fruits and Chips and Runners Point. Just outside town is the training camp where it all started for many Kenyan top athletes, such as 800-meter Olympic champion David Rudisha and 5,000-meter world champion Vivian Chariot, the St. Patrick's Athletics Youth Program.
Good. Downwards, me relaxed. Very relaxed. Kena chini, relaxed. Abuyoni 54%.
At the oldest training camp for young athletes in Kenya, two of tomorrow's possible champions, both 17 years old, warm up. I speak with them in between training sessions. Like all other young runners, they were selected for the camp during primary and high school running competitions in the region. They tell me that when training, they think about all those great Kenyan athletes who made it to the top.
If you are lucky, be what you like at running 3,000 meters and 5,000.
David Rudisha from this camp, who ran 800 meters.
Nancy Jepet from this camp, who is running 1,500 meters.
Purity Jepchichir, a slim, tall girl with sparkling bright eyes, realized she was good at running when she was 12. She wants to be like 1,500-meter runner Viola Kibiwot, who comes from her village.
Oh, my life was so bad because I had a big body which did not fit to train. I like training because you get some fitness of your body. You are capable to do anything. For you, I've decided to train. You just go and train and train well so that you achieve your goal, so that you get something which you help yourself and our own family. It is something that I have taken in my mind that I want to be an athlete.
Laban Kipkemboy, a muscly boy with a big smile, says his parents gave him his running talents. They were runners too.
If I become a successful athlete, I will be improve my brothers and sisters' education, to pay them for school fees, and also to give my parents something to earn for farming. Maybe by 2019, I will be like to represent my country in the World Championship and also in the Olympic Games.
Like Purity and Laban, most young athletes in this area come from poor rural backgrounds, and many see running as a way to improve their lives and that of their families.
Eva De Vries with that report.
Speaking out.
A military appeal court in Cameroon has acquitted and freed a correspondent for Radio France International's Hausa service who had been sentenced to 10 years in prison for not denouncing acts of terrorism and laundering proceeds of terrorist acts. Ahmed Abba was arrested in northern Cameroon in July 2015 while investigating Boko Haram. Shortly after his release, I spoke to Claire Kansriba from Reporters Without Borders about his release and the status of media freedom currently in Cameroon.
Reporters Without Borders is relieved to hear the verdict that Ahmed Abba might be able to go home soon. And the verdict condemned him to 24 months of prison, but since he already achieved, sadly, 29 months in prison, he should be liberated as soon as possible. So obviously there's a lot of relief on hearing this verdict, but it's also sort of a mitigated verdict because he has only been acquitted on one of the two charges that were still being held against him. So in our opinion, he should have been acquitted of all charges, but still on a human level, it's very good because he will be able to go to leave the prison where he has been held for the past over 2 years and finally reunite with his family.
And there are many of our listeners who don't even know why Ahmed Abba in the first place was arrested. What exactly led to him being arrested?
Honestly, I'm at a loss to say so because if you look at the facts, there are absolutely no reasons that he should have been held, even for one day. Officially, the reason that was given was that he had been in contact with people from Boko Haram and that he had failed to inform authorities about an attack. But the time that he was in contact with Boko Haram after this attack, he was actually in the company of local authorities visiting a locality after the attack took place. So for me, it's a complete hypocritical reasons that led to his arrest and detention.
What does this case in particular show us about press freedom in Cameroon?
What it showed, this case about press freedom in Cameroon, is that some subjects are considered taboo, such as talking about security issues, be it the ones in Boko Haram, but also the attitude of the Cameroonian government towards journalists who covered the Anglophone protests in the Anglophone regions of Cameroon. It seems the government is not very sure of its own power, so it cannot tolerate any criticism or any observation on what is happening. And we see it now in the Anglophone crisis, what has become an Anglophone crisis through the refusal of dialogue. It has led to very many violations of press freedom with several arrests of journalists, prolonged detention without trial, and even shutting down of internet for over 3 months in the beginning of 2017.
That was Claire Kansriba from Reporters Without Borders. And we asked what is this case shows about press freedom in Cameroon and other African countries.
And of course, we have overwhelming feedback from you. We have Dominica's Miguel, who says this is ridiculous. They're trying to intimidate the press.
And Chi Fon from Cameroon says the government of Cameroon will never say the truth to the world. You listen to the national TV station at your own risk and also the spokesperson of the country.
Mm-hmm. And Fon Noel Febe says they barely have a judicial system in Cameroon.
Luis Kumalo says Ahmed Abba shouldn't have been arrested. Now no one will compensate him for the torment he went through. There is no press freedom in that kingdom.
And on our Facebook page, many of you are talking about it. There is one who says that there is no freedom of speech in Cameroon. Once you speak against the corrupt and law-violating government, you are immediately arrested.
Many thanks for that, and that's the end of the show. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.